Okay, great. Because we're going to put two different MP3 files on the internet for you if you go to Manatrain, so you can get either one of these trainings today. The other, our training, because that was really just kind of our update on what's going on and new in Manatech. Now I'd like to talk about how to sign up a tax-exempt or 501c3 organization. It's something that was raised as a question a week ago or so, and I said, okay, let's train on this next Monday. And I forgot all about the incentive program, so we're going to try to fit both of them in today. I did get an interesting email. I won't mention who it's from, but I got an email. Somebody got my email last night, and they wrote back to me and said, why would you want to sign up a 501c3 organization in Manatech? Who's got the answer for that? Come on, people.
It's a win-win situation.
Well, because what are 501c3 organizations always doing?
They're always looking for money.
Amen. I know somebody out there has worked in a charity situation before. They're desperate. In fact, that's the biggest problem out there with a lot of the charitable organizations today is they have no money. And they're constantly doing grants, and they're fundraising, and they're out in the streets knocking on doors, and they're putting flyers together and doing fundraising activities. And if you get inside of a 501c3 and you start working for one, you're going to see that a big chunk of their time is spent what? Doing fundraising. They have great mission statements, they have great purposes, and you know, there are tons of them out there that just, and I set up my own last year called Changing Environments, and we all believe we have a great course of action that, you know, whoever's led, guided, and directed us to step out and do that, that's what we're led to do. But the issue always becomes, where are we getting our money from? And if you watch all the talent in these 501c3s going down the tube, spending hours and hours and endless time and energies around just raising money, when what if they could have residual income? Supported their entity so they could be spending those thousands and thousands of hours doing what the purpose of their organization was all about. Therein lies the reason we go after 501c3 entities, because it's such a blessing to be able to bring in a source of residual income to tax-exempt organizations. So that's the why. But let's kick off and look at the outline. The first issue is, why not just sponsor the organization directly as an associate? And the reason we don't want to do that is we really don't want to, in most instances, we don't want to run afoul of the 501c3 rules about non-qualified income. Because if you take a tax exempt, let's take a church, for instance, and you start having a church that goes into the oil and gas industry or starts building, you know, retail establishments for all sorts of things, they're going to get in trouble with the tax-exempt organization status because of their activities being focused on profitable activities or profit for-profit endeavors. Manatech associate position, could I get somebody to put *6 who's messing around in their kitchen? You're really, otherwise I have to mute the whole call again. Thanks, I appreciate it. *6, and that helps mute. You can listen and you can do whatever you want. Okay, so anyway, so what happens when you start putting for-profit activities in a not-for-profit organization is you run the risk of running afoul of their not-for-profit status, and you don't want to do that. And I'm not saying that a Manatech account is going to do that per se. I'm just saying it opens up the floodgates for that to happen because they have to reflect this income as non-exempt income or non-qualified income. And yet that income starts getting large enough, and they're going to trigger a problem with the IRS. I'm going to cut off the phone because it's just too much background noise. We don't have enough people *6ing. Please follow the directions, and we can have an interactive phone call. Otherwise, I have to do this. Okay, back to quiet. All right, so anyway, so that's why you want to set up a structure that prevents the tax-exempt from running afoul of tax-exempt status or gets them in trouble with the IRS for purposes of their exempt status. The approach that you take with a tax-exempt, you know, your initial contact can either be by phone or you can do it by cover letter. And I didn't attach a cover letter, but I'm more than happy to do that. Your initial contact by phone can look something like this. You can say, hi, this is Mary Jo Hilliker. I'm an independent associate with Manatech International. Our team specializes in helping nonprofit organizations like yours increase their income through enterprise development. We do this without interfering with your present sources of income and without burdening you or your staff with more work. If this sounds interesting to you, we'd like to meet with you for 20 minutes or so and see if our program may have benefit to you. Would you be willing to meet with us to explore this further? And that's how you're simple. You know, what is that, 4 sentences? It takes 20 seconds to put that script together and read that, and you can just call up tax exempts and see what they say. if they ask more questions about it, tend to stay away from answers on the phone with them because you don't want to get into an hour conversation about what is Manatech. So you can say, if they ask you, you know, what is this, what are you offering, or what more information, just say, you know, those are great questions and I'd love to get into it with you, but, you know, that could spend a lot of extra time on the phone. I'd really rather prefer meeting you in person and just showing you what the materials are. But it truly is a procedure that other nonprofit organizations have been using and have built residual income with in an effective way, plus created tremendous results in their community and community involvement. And then let them ask another question. But you really want to try to get to the point of having that meeting with them. You don't want to get into all the ins and outs of Manatech over the telephone call. So anyway, so that's just a mechanism of how to approach them, your initial contact. You can also do it by cover letter, and I'll be more than happy to send that cover letter out as part of response after this call is over. So it's getting the initial contact. You want to discuss why network marketing. When you have that first meeting with them, you want to make sure that they understand why network marketing. And it's you look at, and the best way to say why network marketing versus, you know, traditional fundraising efforts is look at the differences. When you do traditional fundraising efforts, which we all know involves grant writing, you know, different, you know, fundraiser events like bake sales and community projects and all that, it takes a ton of time and effort and energy around that. And the important thing to look at is that as soon as you get done with that fundraising effort, what have you built for the next year? Nothing. You got to start all over again because none of those fundraising efforts are typically residual. They're typically a one-time shot to raise funds, so guess what you got to do? It all over again the next year and all over again the year after and all over again. Or if you're doing monthly mailings, you got to do it every single month and you got to continue solicitation. It's just a lot of time and energy around the income. And this is a mechanism, networking is a mechanism to provide residual income that doesn't require the foundation doing all this extra work over and over and over again. The checks come on a monthly basis. So it's great to have it that way. It also provides a great opportunity for the community to get involved because networking involves people. So you have you get more and more of the community actively involved in supporting the organization. You increase income for the fundraisers themselves. As you see the structure we put in place, you'll see where the individual people who sign up to participate and support this effort are going to earn money themselves too. So you have an inbuilt mechanism of funding and paying commissions to the people that are doing the work to get more and more people involved in the network marketing side of it. So in effect, what it also does for the nonprofit is it provides the consultants or the financial consultants at a no-fee basis because the people that are doing all this are not charging back the non-for-profit for the efforts they're putting forth because they have an independent source of income that compensates them for their work that they're doing. So it also provides a mechanism to help other nonprofits because once you set up your structure, you can go after other nonprofits and get them involved as part of your downline. You can set up partnerships for other nonprofits, and now it just builds on each other. So you could start off like with one church, and you build a structure for one church, and then you could go out after other churches and build that same structure for their churches, but it's all going to be under your partnership structure that you've set up for the initial church. So you have a mechanism, inbuilt mechanism now to help support other nonprofits in building residual income. So it just, and the beauty of it too, the bare bones of the bottom line to me is the freedom of time that it presents to the charity to really operate on their purpose and stay on purpose, on mission with their energies and efforts instead of constantly being dedicating a big percentage of their time towards fundraising efforts. So those are the kind of arguments that you make with them are the representations and the kind of initiative you put forth when you meet with them about why network marketing, why is this the type of thing. Another thing you want to do, I put qualification on the outline because you want to make sure that the 501c3 or the tax exempt is qualified. What do I mean by qualified? Well, you want to find people who want to be helped because there are a lot of them that are going to tell you, well, we're not just not interested, or they might shut you down, they might have no interest in it, they might have some independent funding. Then it's fine. You just say, okay, great, you move on. So you have to make sure you're qualifying, make sure those are people are ready to be helped. You want to make sure that people that catch the vision, that they, you know, they can see the vision about what Manatech's about. So when you start presenting what the Manatech idea is about and optimal health, and so not only are we providing optimal health to people in the industry, we're also providing wealth. So it's meeting a lot of people's needs in the community. So it's just optimal health and residual income for those in the community that want to get involved. And you want to see if they can catch that vision and see the benefits that this is just another mission that they're associated with as a mechanism of fundraising. So they can, and sometimes their mission statement might be right in alignment with what Manatech is doing too. That's why a lot of times when I work with 501c3s, I talk about Mana Relief. So they see the kind of commitment this company has around mission work in and of itself. And then make sure these people are teachable, because you want to make sure they're going to be people that can work with you and are really open to receive and open to learn and grow with this kind of concept. When you get done with your initial meeting and your qualification and discussing and they're interested, now it's time to send out your first package of materials around Manatech. So that's kind of going to kind of be like what you do with a regular prospect, because now you have to build the credibility of what Manatech is. Because now they're sold on the network marketing, they're an alternative source of fundraising, and now the second step is how do I sell them on Manatech. And with that, you send out a pack of information and always book a meeting at the same time you send out those packs of information to them. And the meetings, you want to discuss vision, altruism, describe the methodology, which we'll go into in a minute here. And then you want to make sure that at the meeting you get as many what we call enterprise partners as possible. Enterprise partners are people that are associated with that specific 501c3. With a church, it could be a board of the deacons. You know, with other ones, it could be a board of directors. It could be the staff members. It could be people that are already involved in fundraising efforts. You could have 10 people on your staff around that and take those 10 people to potentially be your enterprise partners, whatever. But look at the people that are mostly decision makers that are actively involved in that 501c3, depending on how big it is, because you're not going to get some of the big ones to have their senior officials involved in it. You may be finding other people involved, because these are people that are going to be rewarded for their efforts in doing the fundraising. Anyway, so you get a group of enterprise partners. Then you have an enterprise partner meeting, and you need, I always suggest people get 6 to 8 people at that meeting, because typically you're going to want to bring out of that meeting at least 3 final, you know, sign-ups. You're going to want to have 3 totally committed partners to this. So if you need to start with 6 or 8, whatever, 3. And you want to send out packages in advance of them. When you get isolated to the enterprise partner meeting, you want to make packs out for each one of those individual partners. And those partners are going to be getting more, not just the Manatech. They have Manatech information packs, but also the nuts and bolts of how to raise funds for a 501c3, how to build that residual income. And then the purpose of the enterprise partner meeting is to get them very familiar with the methodology of what networking is all about, how to share, how to get people on board, and then sign up the enterprise partners. They're going to all come in as all-stars. Okay, so what does the vehicle look like? Let's talk about the vehicle now. That's kind of a methodology or approach towards the 501c3. What is the vehicle that we use with the 501c3? I use something called an enterprise partnership, and I believe that we attached the partnership, kind of a standard partnership agreement that really didn't come from me. I didn't draft it. It came out of a book that was put together by a group of people that were doing a lot of this years ago, and their book is called Living Your Vision and Funding Your Dream, and it was an alternative way to fund your favorite nonprofit organization. In that book that was a product of 21st Century Health, they had a partnership agreement, so I utilized that and when I work with different 501c3s. And so in order to have a partnership vehicle, you have to obtain a DBA, just very much like if you wanted to have a separate position in, you know, your husband and wife's name, you'd use your social security numbers, but if you have a third position, you'd have to call and get a DBA, or get a DBA. You'd have a DBA. You can't use your own names because you already have those being used. So very much like I had International Nutricom. For a number of years, I operated under International Nutricom, and that was just a DBA. Now, today, of course, it's a corporation because of the growth that has occurred and do some greater tax sheltering. But initially, it was just a DBA. It was a sole proprietorship or a DBA. With a partnership vehicle, you want to get a DBA because you want to isolate a name. You want to give your partnership a name, and you want to make sure you file a DBA. You also need a tax ID number. That's what I was getting at earlier. You have a husband and wife has their own social security number. With a partnership, even though it's a non-taxable entity, get that real clear, people. A partnership is a pass-through entity for IRS purposes. So there's no tax liability at the partnership level. It's a pass-through entity. You still need a tax ID number because you have to file, at the end of the year, you file, I believe it's Form 1065, which is a partnership tax return. It's an information return only. All it does is give information to IRS of the transactions in the partnership. And it also, you file copies of the K-1s, which are the flow-through documents that pass on the income to whomever is responsible, which are the partners. Now, the intriguing part of how we set this partnership vehicle up, we have a signed partnership agreement. And in that partnership agreement, it states specifically that all net income on an annual basis will be contributed to the tax exempt. So what you've done by setting up this separate partnership and signing up the partnership is signed up as an all-star in your organization. The enterprise partners are signed up underneath the partnership as the top of its separate legs. That's why I tell you you need at least three, because you're going to try to drive this partnership to presidential status. So you want three people, at least three enterprise partners, one in each of three legs underneath the partnership that you set up. Partnership document says 100% of the net income will be contributed to the 501c3 that you're supporting. What that does is, instead of making the 501c3 an associate and all the income being non-qualified income because it's for-profit income, now all the for-profit income gets reported in the partnership, but it's being contributed as a charitable contribution to the 501c3. So you're converting profit income or non-qualified income for a tax exempt into qualified income for a tax exempt, because it's now been treated as a contribution instead of a for-profit operation. Okay? So that's the benefit of setting up that separate partnership and then putting the enterprise partners underneath the partnership as the top of the leg. And it's their activity that causes that partnership income to flourish. You want to have a business plan for your partnership because you want to make sure you're doing business and you're in business, so you draft a simple business plan. I have a couple of them that I use for management, but it doesn't have to be real sophisticated. Maybe put some income projections or, office needs, staff expense projections. Of course, one of the expenses of the partnership is going to be on a monthly basis. They have to have an automatic order. So you're going to have to make sure that automatic order is in place so that the partnership continues to earn the residual income paid through Manitech. So that has to be done. And then some people ask me, well, Mary Jo, what do you do with all the product at the partnership level? Well, you can contribute it. You can contribute it to Manor Relief. You can contribute it to the church. You can also make a contribution with it that way, shape, or form. So there's many ways, things you can do with the products that you're buying on a monthly basis. The other issue that comes up is, what do you do with the enterprise partners? And everybody works a little differently, but it's your option. A lot of the enterprise partners, they're going to build income themselves because they're building their own legs. They've become, in effect, the downline of the partner. And their job is to go out and get people signed up, and they can go through the 501c3 itself in a church. You can just run through that church and get people to say, hey, all the commission structure is paid directly back to the church. It's just incredible how people are more willing to participate in something like this if they know that the church is benefiting from it or whatever institution you're working with. And then they more readily sign up because they see the profit going back to that 501c3 as a fundraising effort. And so you structure it that way. The enterprise partners go after people and sign them up. You have a couple choices. You can allow the enterprise partners to keep all income they earn, and I think that's a valid way of doing it because they're going to be doing all the work and sharing for the most part to kick it off. Or you can even have them sign a contract that they agree to donate after expenses 100% of the income they make in their respective individual positions. They can make a charitable contribution to the 501c3. That gives them the benefit of getting a charitable contribution on their tax return to offset the income that Manitech's paying them too. But you can do either way. You can allow them to keep it and decide whether they want to do with it, or you can get a commitment from them to contribute the income they earn too. Either way you want to do it. I just think it's a neat way to compensate the people that are doing the most work in terms of causing the partnership to be as lucrative as possible, thus making the most significant donations to the 501c3. Your function as a facilitator, you're gonna actually train and implement the plan. You're gonna give trainings to the people so they understand it, very much like a master associate training as we had in the past, or just a business training. How do you share? How do you get out there? What materials do you use? It's our standard kind of training that you do for any new business owner in terms of how to get people signed up and on board. And depending on what system you're using, there's so many systems out there today, it's a little confusing, but nonetheless, whatever system works for you and which one you choose or what your upline is promoting, that's the kind of system that you would suggest for them. So if you're using the Manor Results type thing, you can fill out, you know, those forms and figure out exactly what program they need, intensive or whatever. You know, whatever it is that you're using, that's the kind of training you're going to do for people. And you want to make sure you keep it simple. Keep it simple for them, and that's why maybe the Manna Results Program is a great one for this type of entity in and of itself, because these people aren't driven, their total commitment to optimal health. They're driven because you're presenting it as a fundraising opportunity. So you want to keep it simple. Alternative structure, some people just sign up pastors in the church because they feel, wow, if the pastor's involved. A lot of pastors don't want to do that, though, because they don't want it to look like a conflict of interest. But there are a lot of pastors who do. In fact, one of our platinums is a pastor in a church in Australia, and he's just, you know, the number one top business builder of the year award back in 2002-2003, and he's a pastor of a church, and he took it and just ran with it in churches all across Australia and did just a phenomenal job. So it can work in churches, but there are pastors that don't want anything to do with it because they're afraid it looks like a conflict of interest, kind of what we sometimes get even from the doctors that we get involved in it. So you can do that. Or, of course, you can sign up to tax exempt yourself. If you choose to do that, that's what you can do. But just know that if you settle that income and it really takes off, you could be jeopardizing their status. So that's them. And then the last thing I put on the outline were some helpful references. And I'm not even sure. I haven't looked at health and wealth for you. I haven't looked at that website in a long time. This came off of a training I did back in 2003 on how to sign up tax exempt. I revamped it a little bit, but I didn't get a chance to revisit that. But you can look at that if you want to order some more information, or let's see if that web's still in existence that gives you some more information on signing up tax exempt. But that's kind of the package of how to put it together. And I'm going to get off of mute and just see, because we've got about 4 minutes left. Maybe we can get some questions answered here. Hang on a second. Okay, is everybody back?
Yep.
Okay, good. And so does anyone have any questions about signing up tax exempt? Everybody gets why to do it, right? Does everybody get the why? I mean, mm-hmm. You know, you got to understand that it's a beautiful opportunity for a tax exempt to earn residual income and get out of that fundraising rat race they're always in. Yeah.
Can you go over here?
So do the enterprise partners actually go sell the Manatech products? So they're spending time doing that?
Yeah, the enterprise partners are spending time like you and me. They're Manatech associates that are trying to get people on board to start swallowing the product. So they're actually sharing.
But you're saying that they would save time, and now this seems another time gobbler.
Well, it's a time, but they're earning income on it, and it's not time out of the, depending on who the enterprise's partners are. It might be the deacons, or it might be who they might be in the organization.
Yeah, so normally be some of the leaders, like the vestry or the deacons or whoever, yeah.
Right, but what happens to them, too, is that they start getting other people involved, and then the other people underneath them, just like what happens to me. I mean, I look at my organization, I spend time doing Manatech, but I've got, you know, 3 presidentials and 22 executive directors underneath me, and guess what? I'm not spending all that time. You get it?
Mm-hmm.
The benefit of earning the kind of income you can earn based on using other people's time. It's a leverage concept. Does that make some sense to you?
But are they like fundraising for the organization? Is this just a vehicle? Or
they're not fundraising. Their whole goal is to just get people started on Manatech products, just to build a network marketing business.
And can they use the idea of the organization as being a leverage, like they're saying this is in order to help?
But the benefit, absolutely.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
The whole benefit. They go out, like somebody would go out, like a church. You go out and you say, hey, this is our new fundraiser for our church. This is the way it works, and we're selling products, Optimal Health. It's like doing a candy bar sale where all the proceeds go to XYZ. You do the same kind of, you know, marketing technique, because all the proceeds from the commissions on this go directly to the church. So people are more inclined to participate because of that. They know that all of the commissions flowing upstream are going into the church to support the church. Yeah.
Great. But health and wealth, that's not a website, that's an email address that you put.
Is it? Did I give you an email address?
No, it's a website.
I think it's a website.
You have an at sign. Doesn't an at sign indicate a web? You have an at sign. Health and wealth for you at erols.com. The at sign indicates an email.
Let me see if I can clarify that for you, and I'll try to. If I don't do it by the end of the...
It's healthandwealthforyou.com.
.com. Okay, .com. Healthandwealthforyou.com. That might be somebody. Okay, you got it? Healthandwealthforyou.com. Just get rid of the at arrow. Okay?
Thanks.
You bet.
Very good. Could you have Lydia email, like, some of the business plans that you might suggest using?
Sure, I can do that.
Yeah,
that's
okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
Don't forget the letter.
And the letter, okay, I'll give the cover letter how to approach a tax exempt. Okay, great. Would you like a copy of the script I wrote, read, too, about how to have their first phone call?
That'd be great.
Love that.
I know, but then you don't have to go back and listen to the phone call three times over and try to write it down as you're listening to me talk. Okay, I could do that for you. All right, great.
Very good.
Uh-huh.
The first comes up is Moms for Life, that's Health and Wealth for You.
It comes up with what?
Moms for Life.
Moms for Life. All I can tell you is it may not, as I said on earlier, I probably shouldn't even have left it on the outline, but it was a valid address, like 3 years ago when I did this training. I don't know what they're doing at that site today. So if it doesn't prove to be worthy for you, then just ignore it, okay? It's great.
It comes out of
radio. Any other questions?
Thank you so much.
You bet. Yeah. Does this help you guys a little bit? Does this make sense?
Extremely. Yeah.
Good. It's a great tool, and it's a great effort, and I'm telling you, everybody's looking for it. The tax exempts are dying for something like this, so it's a matter of just getting out there and start approaching them, getting a good approach back together, and touching people's lives that way. When I approached my church,
DBA and the tax ID number.
DBA? Where do they get DBA and tax ID number?
Yeah.
That sounds like scotch in the background.
It does. It is.
Scotch, I would like to get done. The DBA is very simple. Most registered deeds office in any county has a DBA office that you go to and get a DBA certificate.
Okay.
You just register with them. The tax ID number, you can make a simple telephone call and get a tax ID number in about 1 minute.
Okay.
And you can, if you don't know how to do that, just, IRS.gov is another place to look for tax ID.
Oh,
IRS. And you can get tax ID there.
Question, please. On the business tax you say to send out or to give out, I mean, could you get a list of, could you send an email about what could be in those business tax?
Well, it's kind of like your standard business tax, but I'll give you an idea what I do. Okay, email, business pack. Okay, what I would send out on the business pack. Okay, yep, I think it's in the outline. Did I not put it in the outline? It's in the incentive outline. Look at the incentive outline, and it says start approaching people on the business opportunity, items to use, a retirement plan, dynamics, a legal network marketing, why this is the best business opportunity of the decade, my DVD, updated financial statements, patent announcements. Those are the kind of things that I use in a business pack.
Retirement
plan works, but it's retirement. It's not really retirement. You could change the language. Take that form and change the language at the top and put residual income plan for tax. Get it? Just change the title because it's not about a person now. It's about an organization. So just say, residual income plan for tax exempt. They'll love that. And then it just shows how quickly you can get to different levels and change the retirement language to be, residual income language instead of retirement, okay?
You have no time to go over that form, do you?
So you want me to redraft it and send it out? I'll convert that retirement plan to a residual income plan for you.
You have different months and that whole thing on the right-hand side, you have all these different month things and...
Well, that's the same thing you want to show them. It's a mechanism to show them how you can grow it fast or slow. You can show them how much income you can be making from it, residual income. You just don't want the retirement language, but the rest of the information is important.
I get that, but why do you have so many number of months across there on the right?
Because it depends on how fast. The whole idea is how fast you want to get to earn what income. You get it? If you want 1 year, 2 years, three, whatever, and then it says how many months for each of those little different events.
I see.
Okay?
Yeah.
Make sure you understand it first. Don't try to explain it with
that.
I know, there is a slight complexity to it. I took it off of somebody else's form, and I just redrafted it. They had done this with two legs, and I just converted it to three because that's the way you ought to build your magic business. Start with two and move on to a third leg when you get to national status. So, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay? You bet.
Great, Joe.
Uh-huh.
I hate to sound kind of stupid, but what is a DBA? No,
that's okay. Trust me, when I got the email this morning and it said, approach a tax exempt, I started giggling. But, there is no stupid question, because if you have a question, then it needs to be answered for you. So go ahead.
Okay, what is a DBA?
Oh, it's business as. It's taking on a name. Just like you've known my, for people who've known me over the years, you know that I go under the words International Nutricom. That's a name.